Welcome back for round two of the Comptroller's Office. The court will go ahead and call 0319-003-48CV Glenn Hager et al. Versus Alcorta et al. Parties to make their announcements, please, for our audio record.
Ann Hartley for the Comptroller.
Morning, Ms. Hartley.
John Smith here for the appellees of the University here at the Trial Council.
Good morning, Mr. Smith. And Ms. Hartley, whenever you're ready, the floor is yours.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. This is a case about jurisdiction. Does the Travis County District Court have jurisdiction to decide de novo whether the Alcorta plaintiffs are entitled to the unspecified money they demand based on the papers they presented to the Comptroller in March of 2018? Section 74.506 of the Property Code creates a limited waiver of the state's immunity from suit. Under this statute, a suit can be filed. Suit is authorized if the Comptroller denies a claim filed under this subchapter, meaning subchapter F, chapter 74 of the Property Code. If the Comptroller denies something else, a general demand for unspecified money that is not a claim filed under this subchapter, then immunity is not waived.
Can I interrupt you on that issue? So if the Comptroller decides it's not a claim for whatever reason, you know, I understand the reasons in this mm-hmm. case, then are you arguing that the person who's filing has no remedy? They can never go to court to have even the denial that a claim has been filed reviewed for some kind of a yes, there's enough, no, there's not enough?
Well, Your Honor, I hear that as two questions. Am I saying there's no remedy? Not at all. If a person wants money from the Comptroller and files something and the Comptroller says, this is not a claim, the person can come back. The person can say, well, what is a claim? How do I file a claim? And the Comptroller can help with that. So the remedy is to file a claim that is a claim, which first of all says, what are you claiming? And the second part of your question that I heard was, am I saying that the claimant can't go to court? Well, yes, sovereign immunity says pretty much you can't sue the state unless you satisfy prerequisites. And in this case, the prerequisite is whatever it is the Comptroller either doesn't decide or denies, which we agreed a while ago, those are the same things. If that thing that is denied is a claim filed under this subchapter, then yes, you can go to court and get
I'm sorry, did you say that not making a decision is the same as denying the claim?
Yes, and 74.506 has two sections saying how you get to court. And one is if a claim is denied. The other, which is what happened here, is if the Comptroller just doesn't make a decision. Mm. If somebody just presents a blank piece of paper and says, I put all of my wishes on this piece of paper and I want $1 million based on my wishes. Well, the Comptroller is not going to do anything with that piece of paper because it's not a claim for identified property. And that's the only kind of claim that the Comptroller can decide. So lack of a decision on a claim filed under this subchapter it gives you, I think you 90 days and 60 days. It has the same effect.
Okay. You say property that's not identified, but I mean, isn't this case about mineral rights connected to land? Is that not specific enough? I mean, you say it hasn't been identified. I guess
right.
I have trouble with that.
That is not specific enough. The way, Chapter 74 in the Property Code is, that's pretty much the chapter on how to claim unclaimed property. And the structure of Chapter 74 is based on specific identified property. There are the Section 74.501 is part of Chapter 74, and it says, how do we know what a claim filed under this subchapter, that term, means? Well, 74.501 says the controller reviews a claim filed under this section, and all claims to which this section applies must be filed in accordance with the procedures, contain the information, and be on the forms prescribed by the controller. And I will say the issue here is not forms or procedures, it's information. These requirements work together. The procedure the controller uses is an online form that requires information necessary for the controller to be able to review the claim.
And can you explain to me that four-step process? Because I don't think I understand exactly how it works. You're supposed to go online and put in some information, and then you get a claim form?
No. You go online, you can go online today and you can type in your name or my name and or your grandfather's name, and you can see, is there any property reported as being owned by your grandfather? If there is, if there's something that you want to claim, or oh, that's my great uncle, I wonder what that is, you click when you're online, you check the box, and there is a property ID number associated with that property, because the way the controller gets property to be claimed is it is delivered. And companies don't just send in money. They are required by law to send in property that is abandoned, which is defined in the law. If basically somebody hasn't claimed it or paid attention to it for 3 years, the property is sent in to the controller with information. I think this money is owned by John, not John Smith, Joe Blow. This money is owned by Joe Blow, and I'm the Abilene National Bank, and this is $17, and I'm sending it in because I'm required by law to do so. If you go online, you can say, oh, that's my Uncle Joe Blow. He lived in Abilene. You check the box. I want to claim that. You don't have to know a property ID number, but there is one. You have to know enough to say, Joe Blow, Abilene. And when you click that box, you supply further information, which is not at issue here. Who are you? Are you a corporation? Are you an heir? Are you, you know, what is your relationship to the reported owner? But you can file a claim for...
Okay, so is that your claim right there?
Yes, when you're online, you click the box, and you when you're online, you can't move past the first screen until you identify some property to be claimed. What if you type in unknown owner? And that's the way it works now. If you type in unknown owner and you're looking for mineral proceeds, you're going to get a whole lot of choices. And in fact, I think the system now will produce the first 1,000. I think there are over 4 million properties reported in the name of unknown owner, or where that field is blank. But you're going to want to narrow that down. You're going to want to say, oh, my ancestor, or the person whose property I'm looking for, lived in West Texas, not East Texas, so I'm not interested in San Augustine County. So you would narrow down the properties that you're interested in. You can check as many boxes as you want, and every box you check has a property ID associated with it. And then proving your ownership is a separate issue, and that's not the issue here. The issue here is, what is a claim? And a claim is for specific delivered property. It's not just for some money.
Okay, so going back to, I'm trying to understand.
Okay.
So you're on the web, you find the property you want, and you click on it, and then do you get the claim form?
No, you don't get a claim form.
Okay.
It's like buying something on Amazon. You click boxes, and you don't get to the next screen until you fill out, you forgot your state, and it will send
right.
you back.
So you get to the next screen. And
you
then
get
what
to
happens?
The next screen, and finally there's a box or a thing you click that says submit, and then you have filed a claim.
Okay. So I know that you can do it in person.
Yes, you can do it in person. And when you do that, in the case of royalty payments, if you come in and say, I need to look for royalties owned by unknown owners. If you don't narrow it down, there's going to be over 4 million. If you do narrow it down to, say, 20, the controller employee can say, well, come over here, look. Edwards County and Panola. Yes, those are the ones I want to claim. And you tell the controller employee who will click those boxes, and so that claim will be submitted. I would still say it's online because it's through the controller's property database.
So when the appellees came, I guess in March,
yes,
to the controller's office,
yes,
to do that, what happened?
What happened?
Yes, why were they not either allowed or helped or what happened?
Okay. Exhibit 1, which I is in front of you, is the paper that they presented, and which they are calling their claim. I call it a demand. And the property ID just says unclaimed mineral proceeds. Well, we should go back to look at what is the money the controller has. Subchapter F, which is the subchapter that we need to focus on, is called claim for delivered property. And delivered property is specific property an oil company, will send in $100 saying, it's 1986, I am Exxon, I don't know who the owner is, but here's $100. And unknown owner, in this case, would be the designated owner. Well, that particular $100 is reported. There might be several $100 reported properties, but each one is unique, each one has a property ID, and if you want to claim some $100, you have to say which one. You can't just say, I claim $100. You have to say which one, which gets back to the property ID.
But here, I mean, the county, like, counties are listed here, which is what you were saying before. You know, you identify like a county, like, oh, it's not St. Augustine County, but lived out in West Texas, so it's a West Texas county. And just looking at the form you want us to look at here, I mean, it lists counties. I mean, is that not specific enough?
No, specific would be a property ID number.
But to get to that, you would go through, you do a search, and then you say, oh, I want to claim this $100 from this county. I mean, is that what you
Yes, you can go to the controller's office and say, you can start out with all unclaimed mineral proceeds, and that's going to be over $4 million. You can narrow it down, and the controller employee will help you with the search. Narrow it down to 100, and you can claim all of those properties. They will all have property IDs. You don't need to know the property IDs when you come in to make a claim, but you do need to know enough to say it's West Texas, not East Texas. It wasn't 1993 because my grandfather sold the land in 1971.
So but that form says the counties. So what was the break when they come in and they say, okay, it's in these counties? Why was the comptroller not able to say, okay, let's go on the computer and look at those counties?
Because the property is not reported, two answers, it's not reported by county, it's reported by owner. Now, I will say, and this is not in the record, but you're obviously interested in this, the controller did give the counsel for plaintiff a database, this is public information, of all unclaimed mineral proceeds reported as owned by either unknown owner or where that field was blank. We are not hiding this, but it's a lot if you don't narrow it down. Sometimes people do narrow it down. They do know my grandfather owned some land in Andrews County, and I think Exxon was out there 5 years ago, and I'm going to go check that out. And what equipment, and I'm thinking now of a specific case. Oh.
I'm going to give you some extra time since we've needed a remedial course in the internet.
Okay. So,
give you 4 or 5 extra minutes.
No, I forgot what I was going to say.
Exxon.
It's gone.
Did we ever get to the point where a specific property ID number in the possession of the comptroller's office was requested in this process?
Then that's a claim. And then you have to prove it. But that's
I mean, in this particular process that no, they went in,
no,
there, did they ever get to that point?
With any property ID was ever filed, and the employee kept asking them, what property do you want to claim? And they just said, well, look at the commission report, which does not say anything about, you know, the Exxon well, 1996, in Cameron County, you know.
Seems a lot of this will turn on this whole language of claim filed under this subchapter.
Yes.
Who decides that? I mean, if there's a conflict over whether a claim has been filed under the subchapter, can't that be the subject of a deck action or some sort of judicial review?
Well.
And what if you had a theoretical unreasonable comptroller that just refused to admit that a claim had been filed? Is that the end of the road, or do you have some judicial remedy?
Well, that unreasonable controller would file a plea to the jurisdiction, and a court, of course, has power to consider its own jurisdiction, and that court would say, as I think your term was, you're crazy. This is a claim filed under this subchapter. The trial court does have jurisdiction, and we're going to send it back for the trial court to consider de novo whether this claim, which is a claim filed under the subchapter, should be paid.
And would that be under the property code or under a UDJA type
analysis?
Oh,
that would be under the property code because there is no jurisdiction for declaratory relief, and I think after Heinrich and Sevcik and from this court, McLean and Springfield, the UDJA does not create independent jurisdiction if there is a specific waiver of immunity, as there is under the property code, then suit can be filed under that, but you don't get redundant relief under the UDJA, and if jurisdiction is not granted under the property code, you can't just create it anew under the UDJA, and you can't get redundant relief under
so
the UDJA.
So for that specific question of has a claim been filed under this subchapter, why is there not jurisdiction under the property? Why didn't the trial court get it right here?
I'm sorry?
I mean, the trial court, as I understand, denied the plea to the jurisdiction as
right.
did the Chapter 74.
Right.
Isn't that the right answer? To the extent that the question is, has a claim been filed under the subchapter?
And it's a question of law, which is why we appealed it. We think comparing the claim with Chapter 74 and the structure of Chapter 74, which focuses on specific property, that's a question of law. And jurisdiction, whether jurisdiction exists under Section 74.506 is a question of law. And we think the trial court got it wrong, and that's why we appealed. Okay.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Smith.
Good morning, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please the court.
The comptroller's definition of what is a claim under Chapter 74 makes sense in really simple claims. Like Judge Triana, I was curious. I hadn't had much interaction with the unclaimed property statute before I was brought into this case. And so I went on the website and I plugged in my name and an address, and I got dozens of lines of information. And lo and behold, an insurance company had apparently attempted to refund some sort of a premium to me. And so I found $37. I hit the jackpot and made the claim. And so in those kinds of cases where, and you've probably read this in some of the briefing, where owner-centric information coming from the claimant matches with what the comptroller has in his database, yes, it's quite simple to give them the property ID number that the comptroller claims has to be given before there's a, quote, claim under the subchapter. But this is not one of those claims. This is a claim, and if you've looked at the commission report on unclaimed mineral interests, where who owns the claim and where the property was can be very complex, because years or decades or generations have gone by with people not receiving their claims.
And lots of dividing by 16.
And all of those things, Your Honor. Most of the people that brave enough to remain in the courtroom, despite our warnings that this would be really boring, they're claimants. They're descendants from people who, based on the evidence before the trial court, are owners that have taken through generations of deeds and wills and so forth to make these claims.
Didn't the comptroller system, though, set up to where, I mean, it's not the comptroller's job to adjudicate what these folks own and where it might be. The comptroller is a bucket that holds these individual property pieces. And at what point do you have to go to the comptroller and say, listen, I'm wanting piece number X and piece number Y?
I think that's an excellent question. I think that highlights that there's a gap between information that people like our clients can possibly have and information that only the comptroller has. Both in the briefing and in the commission report, there's a recognition that there are payments that are actually made in unknown names that are held by the comptroller. There are certainly claims that are paid in that are not in the names of our clients. And I think in the argument in both the briefs and just now by the comptroller, they recognize the fact that, you know, they talk about the helpful comptroller or the helpful comptroller employee. I mean, we would argue that person wasn't at work on March 12, 2018. But whether or not we make a claim under Chapter 74 that could act as a waiver of immunity to create jurisdiction in the trial court shouldn't be dependent upon how helpful the comptroller employee is on that particular day. There is conflicting evidence in the record. We filed affidavits in which our folks say, yeah, we went there. We presented them all the information that's contained in Exhibit 1, and he might have looked up a couple things in the record or on their database, but beyond that, he wasn't helpful at all. And so at that point, we were told to, there's nothing else we could do, and we left. And so the question is, I think, Your Honor.
Well, Ms. Hartley said that this is public information, that you can go and you can do the same kind of search, not by name, but that you can go under unknown owner, I guess is the term. And you can go ahead and do the search. So why is it that we're having the comptroller do the search versus y'all doing the search?
That's a good question. My understanding, and this is not in the record, but my understanding is that as of the date that the attempt was made in 2018, that there wasn't an unclaimed or unknown owner option in the website. My understanding is that in order to generate the form that was filled in, the paper form that was filled in, trial counsel went in and had to, you know, put other names in to just get the forms to print out, because it wouldn't let you pass the screen if you didn't get the first screen if you didn't get a match on your name. So that may be the case today, that you can put in unknown property. My understanding is also that it was only after the suit was filed, and I believe there was discovery requests and then a motion to compel that was granted, that then the information that Ms. Hartley said was turned over to Mr. Bressy, these millions of lines of information, you know, that's that's now in possession of plaintiff's counsel.
Okay, and so how does the report for the Unclaimed Mineral Proceeds Commission describe your client's property? My understanding is that the report was like, look at that. So to Ms. Hartley's question of how could they possibly narrow it down at that time, understanding that maybe there was no unknown property, how was the report sufficient in claiming or in saying, see the Unclaimed Mineral Proceeds Commission's report?
And I had the same question. And what it doesn't say is that we have check number 278 from Exxon for $837. It's definitely not that detailed. The plaintiff's position on that point was, look, this commission was set up for the purpose of unclaimed mineral interests that go back generations. And it specifically talks about these land grant claims from Spain and then Mexico and the Republic of Texas, and it identifies counties. And what we were saying is, yes, look at our abstract of title, look at our evidence of where we descended from. You know, these are, if there's unknown claims that have been paid on these properties, then we're the proper claimants for those claims. But I want to be clear, it doesn't say it's this well or that well. It doesn't get that fine, because as detailed as the commission was, they couldn't be that detailed.
I assume there are pieces of that property that are in private hands and the wrong hands and all over the place. This just happens to be them going after the ones that might be within the comptroller's purview?
Correct, Your Honor. I mean, and I think that's where we get into the issue of, you know, the comptroller's argument takes, I think, sort of linearly. And so the way I think of this is, along the line of things, you've got somebody that has the property, that's holding it, they pass it along to the comptroller, and then you've got claimants. And so the requirements that Ms. Hartley talks about and that they briefed about this is specific delivered property, those are all requirements in the statute that are talking about, here's the requirement for what the holder has to do when it pays it into the comptroller's office. And then the comptroller has to identify it and hold it. It puts it into the general fund, but it has to keep up with where did it come from and so forth. But it doesn't say that the claimant has to turn around and before they can ever even have a claim, that they have to give a property ID number. That dismisses the known facts that there are amounts that are paid to unknown owners. And there's information that only the comptroller has, and it's even suggested in the commission report that there may need to be cooperation between the comptroller and the claimant. There may need to be some help sought out from the person that paid the money in. The notion that in such a, because for instance, there's a large portion of Padre Island here that's at issue. There's, I think, and I don't profess to have memorized the entire saga of Padre Bailly, but my understanding is we're talking about 1 million acres. So the notion that these claimants would need to go out and try to ascertain every single acre, every single well through the judicial process before they even go to the comptroller, I don't think that makes sense.
But does the comptroller have the duty to do that?
Right.
I think the comptroller has the option to do it.
Well, no, I said duty, and it needs to be statutory, right? I mean, the commission report's a commission report, but, I mean, I've seen situations where the comptroller had something in my name, and I'm two buildings over, and they never bothered to call me. I mean, obviously, they don't have a duty to call and go, hey, we got some property of yours. I'm just kind of wondering where that duty to identify the specific property that folks are seeking lies.
And I think that's fair. You know, I was thinking about getting ready for this argument that in our brief, I have to take full responsibility. All I'd really said is they're wrong. It can't be you have to give them a property ID number. It can't be that. You know, we've given them enough information. So it occurred to me that, and I think Ms. Hartley and I agree, we have to look to 74.501C. You know, it's procedures, forms, and information. And before she said it, I think I was in agreement with her that it's not about forms or procedure today, it's about information. So the question is, did we give them enough information? I totally disagree that we have to get to the point of having a property ID number before we have a claim. So it occurred to me, what would the standard be? And I would suggest to your honors that the proper standard would either be some sort of a standard similar to a fair notice under pleadings, enough information to put them on notice of what property we're trying to claim, or even something like the standard for appropriate discovery requests, reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of a property that the comptroller may be holding. But because 74.501C is not super clear on exactly what it means by enough information, I don't think that, and because the term claim is not defined in the statute, it doesn't say that a claim only exists once you give the comptroller the property ID number.
If you feel you've given enough information, then why can't you go through like the comptroller says and go through with your information you have, and if you have a list of 100 and just say I'm going to claim these properties, and then obviously, you know, proving ownership is not before us, and that's the next step. But I mean, why hasn't that occurred? Like, why is it? Like, well, I guess, why are we here with you not clicking the IDs on these properties that come through?
My understanding is that we didn't have the information until fairly recently in the litigation, once the plea to the jurisdiction was already teed up. And so if we're given the opportunity to be back in the trial court, then it's my understanding that that will be the next step is to, my understanding is that trial counsel has engaged an accountant who's going through these millions of lines of data to narrow it down. And then there will be claims made, but
so you're in the process now of going through.
That's my understanding.
What everything and clicking the, you know, as they say, you know, clicking the property ID numbers to get what the comptroller says they need.
That's my understanding. And then, but then if we get to that point, and let's say I don't know if it's going to be dozens or hundreds of thousands, but whatever it is, once we make a claim on the specific property ID number, then we're still in the same position where they can do the things that they've already, they have those options. They can accept the claim, deny the claim, or ignore the claim. But our position is that we don't have to get to the point of giving them a property ID number before we can trigger jurisdiction in the court.
So you haven't passed some statute of limitations or other deadline where these folks can't continue to explore the comptroller's information to specify their claim?
I don't believe there's been any statute of limitation blown, no, Your Honor.
And then at the trial court level, what type of a record did you all have the opportunity to put on?
The record in the trial court is everything that's attached to the response to the plea to the jurisdiction, which is affidavits from a couple of the plaintiffs that discuss the trips over to the comptroller's office in September of 2007.
So it's limited to that. There wasn't any kind of evidentiary hearing or anything like that.
There was no evidentiary hearing with oral testimony or anything like that. No, it was because, as I understand it, the plea to the jurisdiction, when I look at Miranda, it's first, you know, is the statute clear and unambiguous? Are the pleadings sufficient? And then if the comptroller attacks the jurisdictional facts, then, you know, has the plaintiff created a fact issue, which I would argue that at a very minimum we have.
Can we go to the UDJA claim?
Yes.
And can you tell me, Ms. Hartley has said that under McLean and Springfield out of this court, and maybe Kara West, she didn't mention, that UDJA claims, if they're redundant, then there's no jurisdiction for those.
Right. And so I have some comments prepared on that. So I think it's a pretty simple argument. The cases are a little difficult to track down, but I think you start with Sevcik, the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court in Sevcik said in a couple of spots, and I'm going to quote this, state agencies are immune from suits under the UDJA unless the legislature has waived immunity for the particular claims at issue. So we've talked about whether there's immunity or not. And I want to be clear, if we lose on the immunity under Chapter 74, we don't get a declaratory judgment claim because we're not arguing that we gain jurisdiction for the declaratory judgment claim from 37.006B. But I think the wording in Sevcik and in at least one other case, several cases that quote Sevcik, make it clear that the court in Sevcik didn't say in a situation of sovereign immunity, you only get declaratory relief if you qualify under 37.006B, okay? And I think you're already on track there. I'm just kind of getting there. But I think what Sevcik said is in order to ask for any kind of declaratory relief, then, you know, you have to qualify under some other immunity waiver, under some other statute. So we argue we did qualify under that waiver. And then now you're to the redundant remedies question. And the position on that is, I mean, I guess I would say if the comptroller, if we thought the comptroller was inclined to be more cooperative, we might say, well, there's no reason that we would need declaratory relief because, you know, we're going to go take care of everything at once in this one case. But it seems to me that there are issues of ownership, descendancy, and things like that that are not specifically directed at our client's rights under the statute, but have to do with facts that are separate from our rights under the statute that may have to be declared in order to determine what property they may be entitled to. So for that reason, oh, and there's one other case, and I apologize for this, but you mentioned Cara West. They had cited Cara West, and I read Cara West, and you guys probably know better than me, that's a long tortured saga, it looked like. And
Cara West 2, we call it.
I went back to Cara West 1, and there actually is a reference in Cara West 1 to a situation where, okay, well, we say there's been a waiver of immunity here, and because of that, we're okay with this declaratory relief that the trial court granted. I had not seen that. I missed that. That's from Cara West 1, 432 Southwest 3rd, 501. I didn't cite it. I want to be very clear, but it's in there because I'd struggled to find cases where a court said, we've got a separate waiver of immunity by some other statute, and the request you're making for declaratory relief is not redundant. And those cases are kind of hard to find. In most of the cases that we argued about, I kind of stepped back and looked at them before this argument, and in most of the cases where the court said, no, you don't get declaratory relief, that's the only relief that was sought, and it wasn't to claim that the statute was invalid. So in those instances, the court said, no, we've now said that the Declaratory Judgment Act doesn't just give you this blanket waiver of immunity. It's either from a separate waiver of immunity under another statute, or it's under 37.006B. And so most of the cases, either the claimants were either solely asking for declaratory relief about their rights under the statute, or something where there wasn't a specific statutory waiver. And
or often it's only looking for attorney's fees.
Or looking for attorney's fees. And the court's very clear. Unless you're seeking some sort of declaratory relief that's not redundant of what you could get, from the statutory waiver of immunity, then you don't get declaratory relief.
And so, what is that that you're asking under the EDPA?
Well, if you go back to the live pleading. The plaintiff's live pleading going into the plea to their jurisdiction, it appears to me that there might be a requested declaration or two that would be duplicative, you know, tell the comptroller to pay our claim or something like that. But there are also requests to declare ownership of the property and things of that nature that are ancillary to but not necessarily duplicative of the relief you would get under the statutory waiver. In other words, let's go back to my $37 from Encompass Insurance that they were so generous with. If I made that claim and the comptroller said, "No, we're not giving it to you," then, you know, I think on the face of the record, I could just simply invoke the trial court's jurisdiction to just say, "Were they right or wrong on this?" I don't need to have a bunch of other facts declared in order to get to that point. But I think this case is much more complex than that. Do you all have any other questions?
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Rebuttal, Ms. Hartley.
Well, first of all, I want to address a statement that I think was made a couple of times, that there is information, the controller is holding information only the controller has. That is incorrect. We have given the plaintiffs, and by the way, this was outside of discovery, we just gave it to counsel for plaintiff because we thought it might be helpful. It is public information. The land office has public information. The Railroad Commission has public information about where wells are, when they were drilled, who are the owners.
The
Comptroller
is
not holding back information.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I was going to ask. The other question I have, is it true that it's the unknown property, unknown owner, that did not come into effect until after the case was filed? I think Mr. Smith had said that at the time.
The ability to search under name of unknown.
Yes, and so that is why there is a Comptroller employee, or there was at the time, who could help people, okay, unknown owners, and that's where I get back to. If that's all the information you have, we're going to have over 4 million properties, which the plaintiffs have now with property IDs.
My question was that ability available back in 2018? Is that?
Yes. When
they went in March, was that
when
available?
They went in? No, you can't get you could not get unknown owner listing
okay.
online, so it was necessary to go to the Comptroller's office. That is true.
But now you can.
Now you can, but that's not the case we had.
And can you tell me, has anyone filed successfully a claim under
yes.
this?
Yes. I had a case just last week. This is outside the record in Andrews County. A producer sent in $300,000 in the name of unnamed owner, and some people looked at that. It's a complicated story I won't get into right now, but said, hey, we own $28,000 of that. Here is information. And these people presented division orders, leases, deeds, I don't know what all, but proved to the Comptroller that this production, yes, you own, but the people had some idea, we own this land, we know there's production, and we're going to claim some of it. Nobody claims money. Nobody has a property ID. Nobody knows that. You claim the property, and the property ID shows up.
So anytime someone would get to the point where they click and they identify the property ID, then that would be a claim under this section?
Well, yes, that's the first and the most important step. You have to say, this $10 payable to Joe Blow in Abilene, and then a property ID will show up. You don't have to know or care what the property ID is, but you do have to click a specific property. And Justice Rose, you were talking about a bucket of pieces, the Comptroller holds a bucket of pieces. Yes, those pieces never melt all together. It is always this $100, this $200, this $200. Those properties maintain their separate identity, and if a person comes to claim, that's my $200, it's there. The Comptroller is the custodian. And I did want to read the a piece from the Commission report, since we've been hearing all about it. I will point out that the report addresses a general situation in Texas. It does not mention the plaintiffs. It does not mention any specific property, but they say, and this is part of the record, since the current reporting requirements for the holders are owner-centric rather than property-centric, it is not possible to match the Comptroller's existing data with any particular original land grant as defined in a bill. And the Commission also found that the Comptroller was enforcing the reporting requirements for holders. Holders don't want to be forced to report more than they have to, and the legislature balances what has to be reported with, the Comptroller has the information that it has. We are not withholding information from the plaintiffs or other claimants. And if the piece of paper, the document that you're looking at here, is found to not be a claim filed under this subchapter. These plaintiffs can file another claim tomorrow. They can file a claim for property. They can identify it. They don't lose anything if this is found to be not a claim under this subchapter, and it is not, and the trial court does not have jurisdiction because 74.506 requires denial of a claim filed under this subchapter, which requires identifying the property being claimed, which you would know by looking at Chapter 74 as a whole. It never refers to property in general. It always refers to specific property. And that light's been red for a while. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Hartley. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Well-argued case. Case will be submitted. Court will stand in recess.